There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
What's next here? The headline, Elon Musk launches hostile takeover of Twitter. Will we soon see, in a Putin-like move to invade Jack Dorsey land, the armies of Elon Musk move it? I don't know, maybe something like that might happen. Hey, it's Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5, 12:07 on this Thursday, the little Friday edition of the show. Glad to have you along. Lots to do on today's show. A guest coming up, Robert Kennedy Jr. Kennedy for Alabama is back tonight at 6. He's going to join me at 12:30. 1 o'clock today, Ray Melick, 1819news.com. We've got a lot to talk about with him in the aftermath of regular session in Montgomery and the procedural moves here in the world of the Senate race and the gubernatorial race. We'll talk about that. And Dale Leash will join me from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. We'll talk about golf carts and a whole lot more coming up at 1:30 on today's show. I also want to just let me get this. Let me just plant this flag. Let me just file this away. And it's a conversation we can have in the future. I thought it was fascinating. So my buddy Bill Finch, he's done it several times, maybe the most recent time, maybe 5-6 months ago. And what I'm reacting to is Jeff was interviewing gubernatorial candidate Dave Owens, right? And Dave is adult recreational or adult use of marijuana, something like that. And then started talking in the world of planting hemp in the state of Alabama. Did you hear that, Dalton?
Dave Thomas.
Yeah. There. Why aren't you on there? Which mic is it?
Well, that's weird.
There you go. Now it happened to me the other day.
Interesting. Yeah, Dave Thomas.
Yes. There. So he's talking about growing hemp in the state of Alabama, which is happening. We've had the ag commissioner on here. I know. But one thing, going back to Bill Finch, and by the way, if you don't know who that is, you should. Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast from 9 to 11 on Sunday mornings here at FM Talk 106.5, one of our most popular podcasts as well, which all kind of ways to get our podcast. I'll talk about that later because I'm on a roll. So Bill says, and this makes sense to me kind of just with a ag mind, he said, we can grow hemp here. You know, we can do that here. It is not the best place. It's not the best environment for hemp or you know, marijuana itself or whatever to be grown, just climate-wise and dirt-wise. People in the ag world know, like, there's areas where you see cotton and peanuts rotated, right? There's other places where you see soybeans and corn planted. Now, certain dirt grows certain things better with fewer inputs, what we call... Speaking of which, there's a whole other story about fertilizer prices out there, like we've been talking about for a month. But liming, fertilizing, amendments to the soil to make – because certain plants like certain dirt better than others, okay? So certain ones grow better in those dirt. And then environmentally, certain things grow those things better. So he's not inaccurate. The state of Alabama can grow hemp, and if we're going to have this deal where they're going to grow the medical marijuana in the state and then put it through the dispensary, I'm a homer. I like to keep stuff in our state. But this idea that Alabama is like the hottest place to grow hemp, Bill Finch, who knows this stuff, you know, what grows and how it grows, he said, you know, that's probably going to be a Nebraska thing. It's probably going to be to the north and the west of places like Alabama and Mississippi.
Well, heck, I mean... there have been 15-year-olds that have been able to grow it in their parents' attics. So, you know, the plant will grow anywhere.
It will grow anywhere. Remember seeing this in my grandparents' cornfields. Now, that's up in south central Pennsylvania and in between the rows. So you have row-planted corn, right? And they're planting corn to feed dairy stock and sell corn. And it is corn and alfalfa, corn and alfalfa. In between the rows, where it was well-fertilized and limed, there would sometimes be marijuana plants that would be planted in there. And my grandfather would say, who's coming there and putting weed in my fields? But no, it's just a side note on that. I didn't want to get too much off of it, but maybe that's something we can bring up with Bill Finch in the future and get it back on the show. It's not that you can't grow it here and all that, but it's not like Alabama is the perfect place to grow it. And that's not, I'm not saying that anti-legalization. I'm for rules being followed. Right now, my fight against recreational marijuana is on the Federal Registry, it being illegal. That's my issue. I'm a rule of law. Either you have the law and you enforce the law, or you don't have the law. That's where I am. It's not about the weed.
Well, you're just trying to reset expectations. If someone thinks that Alabama is going to legalize, and then all of a sudden we become like the new Colorado. I don't even know which climate it would grow best in. Afghanistan?
Yeah, so
that
so
kind of climate.
Actually, it's Putin's thing. So the Russian steppe.
That's right.
I think is where it originated. And so a little cooler, a little drier climate, I think is better. But it's not like they couldn't grow it here. Like I can turn around and take cotton ground and grow corn in it, right? I could turn around and grow strawberries where you would grow. So I mean, you can do that. It's just, is it the highest, best use of that acre of land?
Right.
But this is not the ag show. Right. I'm gonna launch that show here coming up in the fall.
But you did say Bill Finch talking lots of tomatoes right now.
Yes.
Or soon.
Yeah, no, he's been talking tomatoes since January, February. Yeah. I was out pre-watering my tomatoes before the rainstorm yesterday evening. So, yeah, we're good on those. Okay, and the other thing, so Dalton's in here because this conversation he and I were having in the hallway. You heard the news update there. You've probably been hearing it all morning about Elon Musk. And we actually started talking about this at the beginning of the week. Latest headline here, Elon Musk offers to buy Twitter for $43 billion so it can be transformed as a private company. I do like the last tweet from Elon Musk on Twitter. I love the overlay on this.
Mm-hmm.
Was, I made an offer. Then he gives a link to the SEC document, but I made an offer. So this is causing an uproar out there that Elon Musk, how dare he try to buy Twitter? And gosh, if it went as a private company and he talked about actually having it as a free speech site, that would be horrible.
Because, you know, he's had a storied history with Twitter. Yeah, he's been investigated and I think is under investigation by the SEC for tweets that he's made regarding the stocks of his other businesses. But he's been pretty vocal about how important he thinks it is for, you know, free speech, the basically where Twitter is and how it stands in the cultural.
The quote from Elon Musk, I invested in Twitter as I believe in its potential to be the platform for free speech around the globe, and I believe free speech is a societal imperative for a functioning democracy. So I agree.
Yeah, and then he goes,
by the
out,
way, you can follow me at FM Talk 106.5 on Twitter. There's 4,000 or so of y'all that do that. Add yourself to the group.
And then there's been a dance this week. So he, like you said, he took the 9.1% in shares, which was 73.1 million shares, 9.1% of the company.
And makes him the biggest stockholder in the company.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And then the current CEO who took over after Dorsey said, well, let's
Brett
make
Taylor,
this.
Brett Taylor, that guy.
Yeah, what is it? Well, he said,
a chairman. Brett Taylor's a chairman. I don't know who the.
He's, yeah. I can't remember his name, but they were going to offer Musk a spot on the board, right?
Uh-huh. And he said.
But that was a trick because that would cap what he would be allowed to buy of the company at 14.9%. And then he wouldn't be able to buy any more shares until way after 2025 is, I think, how they had that laid out. And then he would only have a piece of the conversation, one vote on the board.
Right.
So I think that might have been kind of a trick to corral him in.
And he didn't go for it. He didn't take the bait.
He didn't.
And you mentioned something a second ago, and what Dalton and I have been talking about today, I said, you know, he is in a, I think it's a brilliant move. Okay, so you can look at it idealistically and say getting somebody like Elon Musk, who is not a far-right person, not a far-left, certain things he's concerned. I think he's like a lot of normal humans. Some things he's conservative on, some things he might be liberal on. But he wants us to be a free speech platform, not shutting down, you know, anybody who has any opinion that's against the liberal orthodoxy. But he wins either way. Because I see it this way. So he buys these shares. He bought in January, right?
Yeah, so we did a little of this math, right? Yeah. 73.1 million shares represented 9.1% of the company. $2.64 billion. So, you know, I'm not good in this kind of world, but just averaging that out, the average price of his shares when he had 9.1 and has 9.1% of the company would work out to about $36.11 a share.
Okay, he bought in at $36.11.
Right.
This is something, while I'm no math magician, equities is something I pay attention to. So he buys in at $36.11. He's now said he's offered to buy Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So either he gets to buy Twitter at $54.20 a share. Okay, and own it and take it private, and maybe he has plans to make it profitable. This is the nice thing about being a billionaire. You can risk more capital. He can either keep it then and get it, or if he does not get a chance, they pull some kind of move and try to block him, or other groups try to block him in this hostile takeover, as they're saying, of Twitter, then he has taken his shares from $36.11 a share to $54.20. I don't know if he's going to pump and dump this thing, but that would be a pretty nice payday.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're talking about a huge increase in the price of his shares. So if that originally cost him, if he's already put in, you know, $2.6 billion, and then the price of his shares nearly double, now, I mean, it's not hard to do that in math, that he'd be close to making around at least $4 billion total. Cha-ching. Off of this $2.6 billion bet.
I like to call that folding money, Dalton.
But I wonder what the odds are there. Do you think that whatever – and you're such a free market – I mean, you've been –
I'm a freak about this stuff.
You're a free market freak.
Yeah.
So when someone says what a company is valued at,
uh-huh.
I mean, the truth is it's valued at whatever someone's willing to pay for it.
Correct.
So whatever, you know, money Twitter might be able to bring back in, it might actually be worth a whole lot more value to whoever these activists are on either side. If they want to control the narrative,
mm-hmm.
then even if it isn't necessarily a profitable business, it might be worth something else entirely to them, just because Twitter's so important into what goes on on the day-to-day, politically.
The echo chamber. Well, listen, once again, he can't. This is a – watch this as a business move, okay? Whether you – forget about the politics of it for a second and think about it as a business move. It is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant that he avoided the attempt to put him on the board, too. He's in a situation, either he gets it at $54.20 and must have some idea how to make that profitable, or – he says, okay, he gets blocked by these groups. They have to try to, you know, counter. They start buying up stuff at $54.20
mm-hmm.
to try to block him. And then he sells at $54.20, walks out with $4 billion and says, cha-ching.
I guess, are you saying there's a reason he's the richest man in the world?
Probably part of it. So, and I want to say, like Gus says Gab is the only free speech platform. Okay, so those that will just say, well, just go to the other one. Go to Parler, which I think we're still on Parler. It's still out there. We still have an account. But, you know, it's like, even if you don't like, Gus, if you like Levi's jeans, okay, if there's something politically Levi's jeans did that you don't like, but Levi's jeans still look cooler than Garanimals,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah, I mean, whatever, you know, if you're getting Jordaches or whatever it is, it's Twitter, even though it is a neighborhood that is absolutely stacked against conservative voices. I want to go there. Number one, because if I'm going to go there, I don't want to have an echo chamber. I don't want to have a conservative version of what Twitter is for liberals, where everybody tells me everything's fine and nobody argues. You don't learn anything in that. And number two, it is the brand. Twitter is the brand. You can put out other platforms, and maybe eventually one will take over Twitter. But right now, Twitter is the brand. Everything else is the Sears brand. You're telling mom you want the Levi's, and she wants you to get the Garanimals.
Yeah, and you can have an app, or let's just say there's like a room where any kind of speech is allowed. Well, if there's no one in the room, then why would I want to hang out there anyway, mm-hmm. right? Even if
that's exactly right.
And there's still a lot of conservative thought on Twitter and a lot of conservative thinkers, and you could still kind of scratch that itch. But it's obvious that over the years, Twitter has been cracking down harder and harder, and it seems to be. I mean, you saw it immediately with the suspension of the president, or I guess it's the eviction now from Twitter, that they have a certain way of thinking. But it is funny who's pushing back against the potential, the possibility that Elon might buy this. And it's a lot of people on the left
mm-hmm.
who have been saying, hey, conservatives, if you don't like how Twitter's being run, then see you later.
Right.
These are the same people now complaining that someone they don't like may buy the app. But also, they're completely ignoring who's running all of the other media. So they're upset that
Yes.
Elon might buy Twitter.
Of course they are.
Leaving out that Bezos owns the Washington Post, that Steve Jobs' wife, the late Steve Jobs, she owns the Atlantic. This isn't new.
No, but they're not going to. They see that as, those liberals see that as neutral or centrist. Right. What we will look at and say, compared to the constitutional republic that we are, those things are left of there. They see it as centrist. So anything that we would see as mildly right, they think is extremely right. If I'm Elon and I get Twitter, I don't censor those people and I don't kick them off. I show them what they, not that the dyed-in-the-wool leftists will ever say anything about it, but regular folks would notice this. You go on there and say, no, all those people are still welcome.
Mm-hmm.
They can have all the opinions. They can say that this conservative opinion is horrible or is fascist. Or keep saying it. I mean, it's free speech.
Yeah.
It's free. If he does that, then he wins. And if they block him and he walks away with $4 billion on a pump and dump, he wins as well.
He always seems to find a way to win. It's something about him. So there have been a lot of really funny tweets to look at because these people are so earnest in their, ignorance and also hypocrisy. But then you have celebrities like Tom Brady who are just begging Elon, if he ends up buying the app, to delete any embarrassing images of them that may have found their way up there. So it's definitely gotten a lot of people talking the possibility that he might buy this, to the point where leaving Twitter has been trending on Twitter now for basically all day. Of people saying they may leave the app.
Gone. You got the freedom to do that. But I wouldn't. If there was, okay, say it was flipped around and Twitter somehow was a conservative, you know, that some kind of conservative person, because I wouldn't like it, but a conservative person that would delete tweets and block people that had something liberal to say.
Yeah.
But say I'm on there. And then somebody who is from the left buys Twitter and says, but I'm going to buy Twitter and I'm going to let your conservative voices keep on. I'm like, good, cool. Like who owns it doesn't bother me. You know, it's the interaction there. Is it truly free? You know, all right, run the break here. Can you hang on?
We'll get some
of this.
Definitely.
Coming right back, more of this conversation. And also coming up at 12:35, Robert Kennedy Jr. joins us here, his show, Kennedy for Out. Speaking of which, right? So Robert and I disagree on a whole bunch of stuff. He's on my radio station. He's also a friend of mine. You can do these things. It can happen. All right, be right back. News next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:26, just a minute or two left here before news and weather update, and then Robert Kennedy Jr. joining us. Dalton sitting here with me. So some of the tweets out there, the people are angry, they're leaving Twitter. I don't care about the red or the blue. What does the green say? What's the money say out here? The Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, so this offer that Elon made, $54.20 a share, when we discussed, I think his average share price with the 9.1% of the company he owns, right around, what was it, $36? Yeah, $36.11. So even if they don't sell it to him, somebody else would have to make that offer. Uh-huh. He ended up making a bunch of money. Well, Twitter, I guess they hired Goldman Sachs to advise them on this trade.
Remember, Goldman Sachs said we bailed out in 2007. Okay, go ahead.
And Goldman apparently said that they felt that offer was too low from Elon, that $54.20 a share. And this Zero Hedge account, which, you know, they're always tweeting about the markets, they've also suffered some suspensions on Twitter. They found that Goldman, who also analyzes, you know, all kinds of companies, but they already had a sell rating on Twitter at $30 a share.
Oh, wait a second. So they had a sell rating at 30, and they're saying that
Elon's $54.20
is too low.
Right.
So they had a sell rating.
So Twitter wouldn't have hired them just to, you know, put out that false narrative, right?
No, not possible. Once again, so the numbers, let's just do, not opinion, numbers. So their sell rating's at 30, what a share?
$30 target.
$30 target for sell rating, and right, they're saying that the $54.20 offer by Musk is not enough.
Yeah, too low.
All right, duly noted. Y'all remember that we bailed out Goldman Sachs? Y'all remember that? Remember that?
What was their, never mind. What was their offer there? I guess they just needed the government to bail them out.
Yeah, right, because, they're back, right? Then they continued the same stuff that has happened before with Goldman Sachs and other companies. A whole other show, years ago. I mean, remember years ago we said,
why don't you just, if you're going to spend that money, federal government, why don't you just take the individual homeowners that are underwater that have, you know, that are not the people that were completely crazy with the mortgages they did, but the people that kind of got sucked into this and make them right and don't, but no. We had to give money to Goldman Sachs. So, and there's Goldman Sachs still in play right now. There we go.
And another guy, you might want to hear his comment on this, Mark Cuban. He said, my conclusion, Elon is blanking with the SEC. He said his filing with the SEC allows him to say he wants to take the company private for $54.20 versus his tweet that said, when he said, I'm considering taking Tesla private at $420, funding secured. That's what got him in trouble. So Cuban said the same thing you said. Price goes up, his shares get sold. He profits, and the SEC says, what just happened?
Yeah.
That's basically how Cuban broke down the offer.
Running the Jedi style on them, for sure. All right, we'll keep our eyes on this story. Dalton, thank you for the updates.
Mm-hmm.
And coming back, Robert Kennedy Jr. joins me, plus Ray Melick, 1819 News at 1 o'clock. Dale Leach from LandNet coming up at 1:30. Lots to do. Glad you are here.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this little Friday Eve edition of the show. Text line, phone line, same, 251-343-0106. And if you've downloaded the FM Talk 106.5 app, if you're looking on the front page there where you stream or you can access our podcast or social media feeds, look at the bottom of the screen, you'll see a microphone icon. If you'll mash that, that's a technical term. If y'all will mash that, then you can record a message and emails it to us and play it back here on the air. So check that out. All right. And tonight it is back. Robert Kennedy Jr. and Kennedy for Alabama, and Robert in studio. Good to see you.
Hey, Sean. How you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing good. It's a Thursday. Thursday.
Rainy Thursday,
yeah,
right?
It's rainy Thursday. Tomorrow is going to be better. And just looking forward to the weekend ahead. I do want to talk about a couple things. If somebody has just, they've been under a rock, just moved here, whatever. Kennedy for Alabama,
this is season five.
Five.
Can you believe that? We started in 2019.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
Season five of Kennedy for Alabama. Folks don't know what Kennedy for Alabama is.
Sure. And I actually love telling this story because I was doing it just the other week where Sean Sullivan and Robert Kennedy Jr. had a conversation at Canabama, I think it was. You were doing a sight show out there.
Okay.
And we were talking – Calabama?
Canabama. Yeah,
Canabama, right? And we were talking about how on occasion it would be good if you had a Democrat come in here that you could kind of – argue back and forth with in that old crossfire or Hannity and Combs style. So you asked me when I was coming on.
Yeah.
And you and I started doing that segment, and we got a lot of positive feedback on the fact that people were actually able to hear us debate the issues and not just sit here and call each other names for half an hour. And from that, we spun off Kennedy for Alabama as a standalone show that we're doing here at our home on FM Talk 106.5.
You know, it was I knew I would have somebody to debate with, to go into the Coliseum of Ideas with. I didn't know I was going to end up adding another friend to the ranks. So, but that happens. So
yes,
it's a good thing.
Yes, and the beauty of this is from the relationship that you and I established here, we were able to expand.
Yeah.
So we went in season four to WVNN up in Huntsville. And this season, in season five, I can announce that we will also be at 93.1 News Talk in Montgomery. So we're slowly but surely making our way across the entire state.
So get this. So my friend Robert comes in. He's got like, it starts off with just a segment on Midday Mobile.
Yes.
Now I'm here in Mobile. He's across the state. I just want to just point that out. A meteoric rise
here
is like it's great stuff. All right, let's do two things on today's show. Let's do a state and a national.
Works for me.
You mentioned this as you came in. The state issue. What happened at the end of session with it's plural, the transgender bills. You know, you got a bathroom, you've got puberty blocker, you got, you know. So your thoughts on that, and you and I we actually hadn't talked off air about this. So.
No, we haven't. You know, I think that was absolutely crazy.
Okay. Right?
And what I've been listening to before we get into the substance of the issue is I've been listening to a number of your peers throughout the conservative talk networks talk about the blowback that is happening and folks basically swinging at Alabama saying Alabama's transphobic. right? Mm-hmm. And I've actually been surprised that they were surprised by that. Because if you actually go through and look at the three, I think, individual bills that roll up into the topic, and the idea that it went through on the last hour of the last day of the regular session, I couldn't imagine that anybody wouldn't expect to get that reaction.
Okay. First of all, Alabama could do a lot of things, and there's people in media and other states that are going to criticize whatever Alabama does.
Sure.
I'll say there's a strong spirit here, too, of like, yeah, I don't care. You know,
well,
I don't care what you think of New Jersey, right?
I didn't actually clarify. Yeah. One point has to be clarified. These were literally Republican strategists sitting mm-hmm. there head in hand going, oh, my God, I can't believe Alabama did this. So this wasn't typically just the Washington Post or the New York Times.
Right, but here's the issue. So if you're looking for a place where conservative ideas don't have to worry about being in a purple state, right? There's not members right now.
Yep.
I'm talking about going forward, but right now there's people that they're taking what people are telling them and constituents are telling them, mm-hmm. and they're working that without fear.
Are they really, though?
Yeah, well, I think so.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you right now, on the transgender athlete issue,
That was not the bill that went through.
No, but I want to say just as a baseline here, that's something that I have seen more pushback on from folks that friends of mine that men, women, Democrats, Republican, independents. There's a commonality of folks there that say, you can't do that.
Here's my response to you on this, Sean. I think you and I actually debated this issue before, was in the state of Alabama, how many individuals are in that category?
Right, and there's...
Zero.
But the one point is, actually, there's two now, right?
There may be now, but you know what I'm saying.
There's two now.
Point in time.
Yep. So, but it's one of these things that if you've got to correct it down the road... Right. Just saying it's not here. And I'm with you. It's mm-hmm. like when they go to pass an anti-Sharia law bill at the end of session, like they did.
Right.
And I said, you know, y'all are wasting time. There's not a big issue with Sharia law coming into, you know, Bessemer mm-hmm. or Mobile or wherever. But this idea of the next sports season, you don't have legislation done and somebody shows up and says, you know, I'm going to compete. You know, I'm transgender mm-hmm. and I'm going to compete. And I've seen more commonality on people agreeing with that than I've seen on something in a long time. I mean, bipartisan, where people say that is just not right.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily convinced that's the case, and I'll explain to you why. So I know you have a daughter, I have nieces, and we talked about the scenario of not politics notwithstanding, but if you were saying, would you want them to have a person who was born a male versus a person who was born a female in a boxing match? Well, we're all going to say no. Right, it just didn't make sense for them to be boxing or wrestling.
So we're going
to
pick certain sports where it's okay.
Well, I'm just saying, us just having the rational conversation.
Right.
Well, then when you start to break it down to something like cross country mm-hmm. and having everybody run at the same time, well, there's no safety considerations or anything
no safety.
Like that whatsoever. So the issue that I have here, and you'll see this when we start talking about the bills that passed on the last day of the session, is we've never had this conversation about what we're trying to accomplish with sports and what are the set of circumstances where it makes sense and what are the set of circumstances where it does not.
Okay.
And lacking that, what I really believe is we're not talking about safety. We're not even talking about female empowerment. We're really talking about the issue of culture and the fact that culturally people don't necessarily understand it. So
I think
it's tantamount to passing judgment without having the conversation say, hey, is there a way for us to work this out that makes sense?
Okay. Well, so I think we're talking to different people because I think you're completely wrong on this. I think
that's shocking, by the way.
Yeah, I know it's shocking. But the safety thing, let's take that away. I don't think that's major. I think the major thing that I hear from people that are not engaged in political discussion all the time,
mm-hmm.
When this comes up, is they said, why should a young lady who is competing in this sport have to compete against a biological male?
Okay.
That, who had the advantage of the testosterone mm-hmm. and all these things to go in there. The reason why you have any divisions in sports is to give more people a chance to compete.
The way that we have weight classes
Correct.
In male combat
Correct.
Sports, for example. Okay.
So you have more chances to compete. Exactly. Like, I mm-hmm. mean, boxing, if, you know, I got to go against Mike Tyson. I'm like,
I'll fight anybody.
Right.
I might not win,
yes.
but I'll fight anybody.
It won't be an entertaining fight except for the Tyson fans, right? So if we look at this, you have
You're trying to get kids
into sports, and what the idea is that with what God gave you,
inside being a female or being a male, mm-hmm. then you will be the best, fastest, whatever, at this sport.
Mm-hmm.
And when you all of a sudden you look at the swimming issue here, which is, I mean, ridiculously silly, and you look at the next person in line is not finishing just a millisecond behind.
I was going to say, Sean, right. I think it's important for us in our conversation here to distinguish between what's happening, call it at the K through 12 level, versus what's happening in college or professional sports, right? Because K through 12, individuals have a lot less control.
But
what's happening at the professional level is a whole different ballgame.
Let me center this. My worry is K through 12 at first.
Great.
And then you can tackle things afterwards. Mm-hmm. But so I think you see whether somebody at the Republican strategist in Maine or whatever doesn't like it. You see, if you and I go out to lunch, mm-hmm. Later this week,
right.
We go talk to people at the lunch table, they're going to say, yeah, you can't. Yeah, it's wrong.
This is what I keep going to. You're using the terms right and wrong,
mm-hmm.
but it was all defined. So it's like, what is it that we are trying to accomplish through sport, and why is it better for us to have, in this particular situation, sex-specific sports versus having some sort of integrated sport?
So,
but you're passing legislation
sure.
before ever having the conversation about it, and that's
but
what
the
my
conversation,
issue about
it. There's a conversation that's happened over the fact that this is where we are with the culture, that we have sex-specific sports. The conversation has happened over the decades. It didn't just materialize.
But sequentially, from a societal standpoint, the issue of transgender is much more contemporary.
So understood, the conversation, though, to say women should, young ladies and women are going to compete against other young ladies and women.
Title IX time frame.
Title IX, too. Yeah. But that whole discussion had already happened, even though it didn't have to happen inside the sphere of current discussion of transgender. It happened because it established what was right for society. That discussion already happened. Now we're challenging that. And so that discussion has already happened.
It happened absent the concept of
transgender. Did we have boys playing in girls' sports before this?
No, you have boys playing in boys' sports before this, and you weren't funding girls' sports.
Right.
That's what happened initially.
I'm for funding the girls' sports.
Absolutely.
Dang it, the music. We'll come back. But it's. I think what you're missing out on here is at any point, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, if a biological male asked to play in the girls' sport, they would have been told no. Right? So it, today, how is that any different? If somebody who was born a male has testosterone, all of a sudden says, but now I want to play in girls' sports. So come back. I know we want to get to some of the things actually signed off in the legislation, so we'll do that when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:50, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. And here I thought I'd get to even talk about who the Democrat presidential candidate would be in 2024 with Robert, but that's something we're going to have to save for the future because this state thing, we haven't even gotten to the core of this yet, but I do want to grab a couple quick phone calls here. Tanya is in Daphne. Tanya, you're on with Robert Kennedy Jr.
Hey, Sean, this is Dr. B, Dr. Butler over here in Daphne.
Hey, good to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. So I just had a little different perspective on this because I've been thinking about this for a long time. You know that I work in adaptive sports, and I work with Paralympics and Wounded Warrior athletes, things like that. So many years ago, we had, there were, disputes on some of our athletes who had prosthetics, who were running in able-bodied races, competed for the Olympics, but were removed because of their prosthetics were believed to give them the competitive edge, and they were beating able-bodied runners. So what happened is we have a completely separate league for Paralympics and para-athletes, and they compete separately from able-bodied athletes because it leveled the playing field. And so I don't understand why we're arguing over any of this and why we couldn't create a whole nother league for transgender athletes to compete on the same field with each other, having the same competitive edge, but being closer in line because it doesn't really matter how far off hormones are. They're in the relative league, and we have, a league that makes it fair.
That third option would be fine. People would probably argue you couldn't, on a team sport, you might have trouble places getting enough players to field a team, but on individual sports.
Dr. B, thanks a lot.
Started that way with the Paralympics and with, disabled sports. So it has to start somewhere and you build upon it.
Yeah, Dr. B, first of all, thank you for that comment and thank you for the work that you're doing. I actually think that what you've articulated is that compromise space, and that's the thing that we should be focused on as opposed to passing a judgment on, you know, what a person is from a gender perspective. And the area where it's easiest to do that are kind of the two that we referred to previously. In swimming, you could have a separate category that identifies those individuals and, you know, times their results to determine what their relative ranking is. And you could do the same thing in, like, your cross-country type sports as well. So I definitely think there's a way to start.
I think that's – I mean, I've got no issue with that. If they don't – you know, I mean, if it's – it solves the problem.
Yeah, and I don't think that it – you know, there's no judgment on gender whatsoever. What we're looking at – is biologically and physiologically, you know, making sure that leveling the playing field. Because, you know, I've been in women's sports my entire life, and we've worked really, really hard to be able to compete on a level field, you know, physiologically with other people who, you know, other women who we can, you know, compete with realistically and fairly. And so now, you know, we're not doing that anymore, and we're taking away, you know, from women's sports, our ability to, you know, excel at the highest level because we just can't compete equally. It's physiological.
Great,
you know,
call.
It's impossible to do that.
Great call. Thank you. Thank you. And come see me soon, Tanya. Thank you. Awesome person here. Let me go Gary in Mobile. Gary, you're on with Robert Kennedy Jr.
Hey, Sean. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
I have a point that goes kind of counterpoint to what Robert was speaking about. We need to have this discussion as to what the goal might be for K through 12 now, talking K through 12 sports. That would be a tremendous waste of time because we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We already know why we have youth sports. You know, the sports teaches, you know, young people teamwork, problem-solving skills, health benefits, self-esteem. You know, most athletes in high school are do better academically. I mean, that's been proven since the 50s. We don't need to revisit that and create some new social experiment with our children.
There you go, Gary. Just,
but that other call she made, you had with the doctor, that was a great idea.
Yeah, I like that. I mean,
a football team full of them. There's not enough.
Right. Well, it's team sports, it's probably going to be hard, but individual sports, maybe they, you know, would have an easier time. I don't like, sure, if they want to start another league for that and my daughter didn't have to compete against, then I don't care. Good. Fine.
And I think what I liked about what Dr. B said prior to the counterpoint that you articulated was that it gives us a place to start. And my concern was not the concept, because obviously we can have different opinions on the concept, but it's just the notion that the government puts something in place that's now a law before you try to figure out, is there any category or way to be able to address it, a la the suggestion that Dr. B had.
Hey, Gary, appreciate the call. We're going to run short on time. Let's see. We get to, my gosh, somebody texted. Let me ask you this. So let me finish on this part here. So the puberty blocker bill, right, where it says to the, you know, it's a felony for a physician to prescribe, and I'm ad-libbing this. A hormone treatment puberty blocker. Do you think that was a bad move for the state?
I do, and I'll explain to you why. So there are two components to that. The first is whenever you're talking about gender reassignment or sex change or gender affirmation, any of that stuff, if you look at what is permanent, nothing permanent is happening right now. So the count of that happening for people under the age of 19 is zero. That was a part that was included as well. Those are decisions we think people should be making when they're full-grown adults, whether it's 19, 21, 26.
And at that point, I have no issue. Once somebody's of age majority, I don't care.
Now, when you get to the folks that are under the age of 18 and they have made a decision that they want to go down this path.
Like a three-year-old?
I don't know whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. I just don't know. But you know who would know? The parent in consultation with a doctor.
Right.
And so because you're talking about something that is reversible, I think it's perfectly appropriate for the parent in collaboration with the doctor to make that decision for the welfare of the child.
Well, okay. If you're talking about not a full remodel, but maybe a redecoration, right? Not
not any physical changes here. You're talking about those drugs, but there's story after story after story. People that took those drugs that have long-term effects from them, even if they decided that they, you know, do want to be biologically what their sex was in the first place.
And I have no problem studying that, documenting it, and figuring out whether or not that's what's actually driving the conversation. But I don't believe it is.
Well, and I think this question is, do you see this? Because I try to think about it both ways. Mm-hmm. Is it a invasion into the parents' right to make decisions for their children? Or is it a situation where it is child abuse to give them these drugs?
It's absolutely not if child abuse.
If they decide that... that little Bobby wants to, you know, be a girl, and they decide that, and they say he trends that way, so we're going to give him these drugs, and then he lives with that the rest of his life. That's child abuse.
Well, anything could be child abuse, right?
Right. Tonight, 6 o'clock?
6 o'clock p.m. Tune in to FM Talk 106.5, and we will look forward to continuing this conversation there.
Oh, good. All right. I'll be tuned in for sure. All right. Back, hour number two of Midday Mobile next.